Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are ready for the next case on our oral calendar this morning, which is in the matter of the welfare of the children of J.A.K. and R.A.W. I don't know if the attorneys have appeared on the Zoom platform prior to this morning. The rules are the same. Each attorney will have 15 minutes for a primary argument. Appellant's counsel will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There's a timekeeping mechanism up in the left-hand corner of the screen. Please pay attention to that so you know how much time remains in your argument. The judges will interrupt you, raise a hand, or perhaps use the raise hand symbol if they have questions. So please be mindful of an attempt to get your attention for a question. We'll give each attorney 1 or 2 minutes to set forth sort of the overview of their argument and the relevant points for the court's consideration. Please keep in mind, we've read the briefs and the record. We're aware of the procedural and historical facts. If we have questions about those issues, we will raise them. And we'd ask you to focus, if you would, on the legal arguments and that have been raised in this appeal this morning. With that, would counsel for appellant introduce herself for the record and begin argument?
This is Elizabeth Walker on behalf of Ms. J.A.K. appellant, and I will be making that argument. Thank you. So this case comes down to a couple of issues. How has the pandemic impacted parents' ability to be able to comply or not comply with services that were offered to them, and as well as how is the pandemic applied when services cannot be offered to them and with them? And if reasonable efforts are actually being made on either case to comply with the efforts of the county. So in this case, we have three children and my client, the parent, J.K., she is a person who is impoverished. She's a person who admitted to the fact that she could not comply with all of the requested efforts. But in bulk, a lot of those requested services or requested efforts were to be, not efforts, I'm so sorry. The requested services were to be on her part were not available to her in a way or a place that was available to her.
So this is Judge Larkin, and I have a question on that. My understanding of this case is that mother has a long history of chemical dependency issues, and that was one of the reasons we had the latest case. Part of her case plan requirements included having a chemical use assessment and following recommendations for treatment. So I read the district court's findings in the record. The assessment occurred. She was recommended for inpatient treatment. The county secured her placement in two different in-placement treatment facilities, and she refused to engage in either program. Is that accurate?
Your Honor, I would say that is 100% accurate. I do believe that in one of the facilities that my client was requested to pay a fee, where she didn't have the funds to pay a fee, to engage in that facility. And when she called to social services to make that fee applicable to herself, it wasn't paid. And so I think that is one instance of the two that you're talking about.
There was another instance where she was then referred to a second inpatient treatment facility. They told her that since she had used methamphetamine within the previous day, she would need to start the program in their detox facility, and she refused to do that. Is that accurate?
I think it's more accurate to say that she was requested to do detox. They didn't have a detox facility of their own. And then—
But she was unwilling to do detox.
Right, then she was unwilling to do detox at that point in time.
Okay. But I'm having a little trouble with the argument that because of COVID, the services she needed were not made available to her, when the service she needed was inpatient treatment, and inpatient treatment was made available to her at two different locations.
I appreciate that analysis, Your Honor, and that is the analysis that the judge took at the district court level. But however, there were other things that were required of her, not just whether or not she got treatment. It was whether or not she got therapy.
And didn't they set up therapy for her online and she refused to do that because she didn't want to do online therapy?
Your Honor, she did not refuse to do online therapy. It was the fact that she was living in an environment such that did not allow her any sort of privacy when she would do online therapy. And so online therapy would not be helpful to her because she had to talk about things or disclose things in an environment where the very issues she was there prevented her from being able to do so.
Well, wouldn't have entering inpatient chemical dependency treatment alleviated that concern and gotten her away from the person who was making it difficult for her to receive therapeutic services?
I agree with you that, Your Honor, but a lot of inpatient treatment is not always based on counseling. It's based upon treatment of the chemical dependency. That's number one. Number two is the entire issue of whether or not that what she was going through was being actually treated. So for instance, in the brief, I stated that my client was suicidal. And all that was offered to her was a 1-800 number.
Let me ask this, and I don't mean to diminish the seriousness of your client's claim that she was suicidal, but what is it that the county should have done? We had a chemical use assessment, had a referral for a recommendation for inpatient treatment, referrals to two different inpatient treatment centers, a suggestion that she move out of the home if it was not safe. I mean, what is it that the county was supposed to have done under these circumstances? I mean, when we look at reasonable efforts, we look at whether they're reasonable under the circumstances, and regrettably, one of the circumstances was COVID. I mean, what is it that should have been done in your view?
Okay, Your Honor, thank you very much for your questions. Let's start over with all of your questions. There were a lot of them there built up. And so I don't mean to not answer any of them.
Sure.
First, what is reasonable under the circumstances? We had COVID. Number two, my client could not move. She didn't have a place to go. There was no multiple times over in the judge's order, it talks about how she chose to be out in the country. Unfortunately, she couldn't move. She couldn't be evicted because both her and this other party was on the lease. She could not move out of that particular environment.
I'm going to interrupt you because I understand that argument, but we still are left with a situation where we need to look at what services were offered to her. Did the county offer her services that she could have used to change her circumstances?
My answer is—
And if your answer is, well, they offered the wrong services because of COVID, then my question is, well, what other services were available that they should have offered and didn't?
Right, so my answer is no. They did not offer the services that were responsible for that effort. My client wanted to leave, but she could not leave, but they did not offer her any other relocation efforts. That was not done.
Such as, I mean, what would the county be expected to offer under these circumstances?
A place to live, for goodness sakes. When you're talking about a woman who's been abused and who's under
drug— I understand that, but I also hear you arguing your client wanted a place to live, but she wasn't willing to leave her lease.
She couldn't.
Okay, so there's a difference between saying the county didn't offer things that were necessary to help her and your client wasn't able or willing to utilize those services.
Yep.
That's the problem I'm having.
Yeah, I hear you, Your Honor, and I apologize. The county didn't offer any solutions. And in my client's perspective, she just could not do them on her own.
Let me ask you this. I look at your brief and I see two arguments. One is the county failed to make reasonable efforts, and we've talked about that. The other is the district court erred in terminating parental rights given the strong bond between mother and her children.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out how to analyze that argument because it seems to me to go to the best interest determination. I don't read your brief as saying the district court erred in concluding that there's clear and convincing evidence of a statutory ground for termination. It seems to be more of an argument that, well, in the end, there's a strong bond. We shouldn't have terminated here, which is a best interest consideration. So in other words, to TPR, we need clear and convincing proof of a statutory ground, a determination that termination is in the best interest, and a determination that there have been reasonable efforts. Am I wrong to look at your argument about the bond between mother and children being a basis not to terminate as one that really goes more towards the reasonable efforts determination as opposed to any of the district court's findings regarding whether a statutory ground for termination was proven?
I believe that they were both.
How does your argument that the strong bond between mother and children should prevent TPR relate to any of the statutory TPR grounds that the district court found proven? In other words, I'm looking at these grounds, like none of these say, well, you can't terminate if there's a strong ground. If you prove these things, there's a statutory ground for termination. Next question. Well, should we terminate? Is it in the child's best interest? Then we look at the child's interest in preserving the parent-child relationship. That's where the strong bond seems to fit to me. I'm not seeing any of the statutory grounds for termination as asking the court to consider or the county to prove lack of a strong bond. So you see, I don't know how to analyze this argument other than as a best interest argument. I mean, if you were to say to me, the district court erred in finding a statutory ground for termination because there is a strong bond. Okay, why? Explain that theory to me. How does it fit within any of the statutory grounds for termination?
I think that that it's not necessarily in the best interest of the children, Your Honor. Because the argument is that the children deserve to be with their parent. And if their parent does not or was not able to comply, is that bad? Or should she be given an extension of time? One of the arguments that I wanted to make, and I only have about 3 minutes today to make it, was that my client agreed that she was not in a position at the time of trial to be able to take care of her children. She agreed with that. And rather than argue the return of her children to her was better, she rather argued an extension of time or a voluntary transfer of custody. She was completely open to that idea because she believed she was not in a time and place where she could do anything other than continue with her case plan, get healthy, but she was saying, I just needed more time.
But what? How did the district court err in declining to give her that more time when there was so little evidence that she had complied, especially with chemical dependency treatment, which is sort of the starting point for her recovery and for all the reunification efforts?
I believe that the county erred because they did not even offer any of the minimal stepping stones or support or made available to them to her circumstance.
I read in the district court's finding that the county provided 3 private drivers that were available to take her to appointments and she would only use one of them. So we have the county providing transportation.
I'm so sorry. So we live in northern Minnesota. So the transportation ability, it's not like you could just jump a bus to get somewhere, right?
Council, I'm sitting in Cross Lake, Minnesota, where I live. Okay, I'm well aware. But what the district court found is the county offered her three different modes of private transportation to get to appointments. And she said, I'm not going to take two of those drivers, but I'll use the one. So, I mean, it's hard to say, well, she lacked transportation. The county didn't give her transportation when the district courts made a finding that the county did offer her private transportation. Did the county not do that? Is that finding wrong?
No, the transportation that was offered was to go to visitation. It wasn't to go to other services. That's where the issue is. Is it offered for her to be transported into Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, so then she could have services or she could have visitation with her children. That transportation was not offered for her to get to services. And one of those three events was such that the driver ended up somewhere else at a different address. The wrong address was given for my client to be able to even to utilize it. So while she was waiting for somebody to show up, nobody came. One of those events, my client found a different resource to get her where she needed to go. On the other event, my client utilized the transportation services. So I don't think that any of those issues should be held against my client, especially when the one where the driver showed up at the completely the wrong time or place.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal argument. We'll now hear from counsel for the county. Would you state your name for the record before beginning argument?
Lisa Tufts, Assistant Becker County Attorney. And my argument is such that I submit that this appeal is a frivolous appeal, Your Honors. Ms. Common has had substantial interactions with Human Services in the past. She has faced termination of her parental rights and transfer of custody prior to this case. And although I would agree that she is impoverished, it was not that she couldn't comply, it's that she refused to comply. The county is not required to offer every single available service, but it's required to supply reasonable services to Ms. Common.
Ms. Tufts, if I can just stop you right there. I mean, it seems to me one of the strongest arguments that that appellant makes is that she couldn't access these services because they were available in Detroit Lakes and she didn't have housing in Detroit Lakes where she would have been able, and that the county did nothing to help her with her housing situation. How do you respond to that argument?
I would respond to that argument, Your Honor, in finding on the court's order, page 5, paragraph 25, which states from the Honorable Judge Tilmoni, Common has not maintained safe, stable housing. Common is homeless and living in a shelter, even after she sought housing assistance and missed appointments to follow up to arrange for housing. And that was another point of my argument. Ms. Common continually says that she was unable to access online therapy services and whatnot because of her living situation with Mr. Stone. Ms. Common ended up living in a crisis center, which would have been available to her throughout the entire case. She chose to stay living with Mr. Stone. And if he had been a controlling individual and perhaps abusive, which was part of her mental health concerns, she had the availability to leave that home. It may have affected her credit rating. It may have caused problems in getting housing in the future, but she had the ability to leave that home for a safe place to access therapy services and chemical health services.
Ms. Tufts,
yeah.
I have a comment and kind of a follow-up question there. First of all, the comment is, I'm not sure I would label this as a frivolous appeal. This is a termination of parental rights. It's a very, very serious action by the county. And I take issue with that a little bit in terms of claiming that it's frivolous because these are very, very serious matters in terms of ending a parent's right to their child. That's my first comment. Second is, in terms of the housing, I just want to follow up on Judge Bjorkman's question there. You commented about finding number 25, but isn't it really an issue of whether or not the county provided those, knowing that the relationship that she is in is not a very productive one, and it's one that she would, it seems like she would have been much better off outside of that relationship, but felt caught between a rock and a hard place in terms of the challenges that she would have. Where is she going to go when she has a place to live, but that's not really where she should be? So why isn't that a lack of a reasonable effort on behalf of the county to find a different housing situation for her?
The county attempted, they hooked her up with like some services through the Lakes Crisis Center and through our housing agency, which is run mainly out of our Mahoobie, Ottawa community area. And she refused to participate. She had two appointments to go over there and seek housing. She did not go. And in regard to my comment regarding a frivolous appeal, I do understand the seriousness of terminating parental rights. However, you will find in the transcript and in my brief that Ms. Common acknowledged that she could not take care of her children. And she wanted the children to be taken care of by her, by the father's cousin by the name of Cora. At the time of the trial, Cora was not a licensed foster care provider, so we could not guarantee that that would happen. Subsequently, all three children are living with the relative that Ms. Common chose and have been with her since December.
Let me ask you this, Ms. Tufts. Acknowledging that mother very candidly said, I'm not ready, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. This trial took place 6 months after the TPR petition was filed. And that 6 months, I mean, that's the height of the COVID pandemic. Why not afford mother a little more time?
Because, Your Honor, in the past 5 years, these children have been in out-of-home placement for over 900 days. Nearly 3 years of the past five, she has been unable to care for her children. She is a palpably unfit person. She suffers from chemical dependency addiction. She refuses to get treatment, and her mental health, she would not address during the pandemic. She said that one counselor wasn't appropriate for her. She didn't want to do online counseling. She had luck with one counselor in 2017, but she refused to go back to that counselor because she thought she needed something a little different. The county offered her everything they could, and Ms. Common just plainly refused to engage in it until the very last minute. She started working her case plan when the TPR trial got set on the court's calendar. The only thing she did for the entire year, these children were removed from the home in January of 2020. The trial was 12 months later. The only thing she did during that time period was she signed releases so that the human services could get information and treatment and services for the children. She did nothing for herself. She did go to the Rewind in Perham, which is 20 minutes away, mind you, and she was able to find transportation to get to that. But she did not go with a referral from human services, or she would not have been in the situation where they were looking for funding. We all know that treatment centers require payments, and had she worked with her social worker and had she said that she wanted to go to Rewind in Perham as her treatment choice, I do believe had she communicated that to the social workers, they could have made arrangements for proper payment and gotten her into that program. And then when that did not work out and they got a chemical use assessment 10 months after the children had been removed and arranged for her treatment up in the Fargo-Moorhead area, and she admitted to methamphetamine use, which they will not allow somebody that is actively using in the treatment facility, she refused to go to detox. And as Ms. Walker stated, the treatment facility does not have a detox center. She would have been going to the Clay County Detox Center, and it is not a great place to be, as I have heard from many clients. But nonetheless, had she spent 2 or 3 days in the Clay County Detox Center, she would have been admitted to the treatment program And we may have considered adding some time on, but she just flat out refused help for her mental health, help for her chemical addiction, help in her housing situation. She just would not participate. She would not visit her children, although I will admit that the children are of an age that they have cell phones, so they may have been visiting via cell phone, but she would not turn up at the visitation center. Yes, Judge Larkin?
Regarding the children, mm-hmm. was evidence presented as to their wishes, that is, whether or not they wanted to return to live with mother? If so, what was that evidence?
There was not evidence of that submitted. The children adamantly refused to live with their father, the RW in this case, who agreed to voluntarily terminate his rights. they love their mother. They want to keep in contact with their mother. The eldest is a daughter, and they have a very close relationship, more of a friendship relationship than a mother-child relationship. And the children agreed that they would go live with this cousin, Cora, and they like her, and they have been with her now for 6 months, 5 months, and things seem to be going well. And the beauty about this termination is that Cora is and her husband are intending to adopt these children, and these children will always have their mother, Jody Common, in their life. The eldest child, I believe, is 15 or 16. And so I think that goes to Ms. Walker's argument about this strong bond. That strong bond will remain.
Okay. So there is no indication that the children will not be able to communicate with their mother in the current placement or the proposed permanency placement?
None whatsoever.
And what the kids are, 16, 14, 12, or about that range, about 2 years apart each?
Yes.
So, Ms. Tufts, I mean, it sounds like that the bonding really goes to the best interest. And if you have, in the best interest, we look at three parts. Mother certainly has expressed a desire to want to maintain the parental relationship with the children. And it sounds like you're acknowledging that the children also want to maintain that strong bond that they have with mother. So why isn't it in the best interest of the children to not terminate mother's parental rights and maybe give her a little bit more time to try to develop the skills that she needs when you look at that strong interest in maintaining that mother-child relationship?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that Ms. Common is so much interested in maintaining a parent-child relationship with her children as much as she is in maintaining a friendly relationship. I think Ms. Common acknowledges she cannot act in the parental role, and children the age of 12, 14, 16, they need a parent. They do not need a best friend. And the placement that they're in now are able to meet their needs. They are no longer neglected. They are getting to school. They are having all of their needs met by this person that is capable of acting as a parent, whereas Ms. Common could not. And once again, I do believe that the children are interested in a relationship with Ms. Common, but once again, it is not a parent-child relationship. It is this is my mom. She's fun to hang out with occasionally, but Cora makes me dinner every night. And there's a big difference between those two types of relationships, Your Honor. Going back to some of the arguments Ms. Walker made, she was talking about Ms. Common being referred to an 800 number because she was suicidal. I would maintain that perhaps Ms. Jewell could have called 911 and had law enforcement arrive at the house, but I do not think Ms. Common would have been too happy about that. And in Becker County, there is a 1-800 24-hour suicide hotline with local people that are responding, that are appropriately trained to deal with the suicidal issue, more so than a social worker who's working in child protection. I mean, yes, she would have some of the skills. I'm sure she's had some training regarding that. But we have a specialized task force team that would have gone to Ms. Common and helped her through that situation. And if she would have needed hospitalization, they could have saw that that was taken care of. And then I believe the other thing is Ms. Walker was stating that Ms. Common desired to have her children go to live with Cousin Cora on a voluntary basis. The Becker County Human Services would not accept a voluntary TPR in this matter due to the history of this family. There are over probably 1,400 days these kids have been out of home placement. Ms. Common is palpably unfit, as she has shown over and over and over, and these children should not have been placed in out-of-home placement for 3 out of the past 5 years while she did not work her case plan. I cede my remaining time.
Thank you, counsel. All right. Ms. Walker, do you have a rebuttal argument?
Yes, Your Honor. I appreciate your time. First of all, there is no statute that requires that a parent be the best placement, or even that they are a great placement option for the children. Their ability to be a parent is preempted by anything that, oh, somewhere else would have been better, or it would have been better for the children if somebody else was able to make dinner for them. We're not talking about dinner, we're talking about the parents' rights, the parent-child relationship, the children's rights, and not whether or not that was the best placement for the children. Also, there was significant discussion in trial talk about a transfer of legal and physical custody to Cora, who the children are with right now, which would be voluntary. I don't know why the court would not have granted a voluntary transfer versus an involuntary termination of her parental rights. If the transfer was going to a family member, which it was, and it had been discussed and it had been shared, the county's only argument was, well, we needed more time because she wasn't a foster care provider at that time, then so be it. Then give enough time to get Cora to become a foster care placement. And if she was a placement option, do a transfer. Why in the world put both my client and the children through a termination process when all of that was?
Yes. Could you clarify for the panel, was an alternative permanency petition put before the district court for consideration at trial?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So my client requested 3 things when we went to trial. The first thing was a transfer of custody to Cora, a voluntary transfer of custody, physical and legal, to Cora. The second one was a transfer back to herself, but a temporary placement with her relative. And quite frankly, then it was transfer back to herself for custody, because she realized she was not in a position to be able to take care of the children at the time of trial. And that's in the trial court documents. The other issue was this issue of that my client had the ability to move. We were in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that was problematic because she could not get into the shelters because the shelters were at capacity. They could not take her in. The county could not provide her other placement because there was no place for her to go. So I'm not.
I read the district court's order for termination. I didn't see any reference to an alternative pleading, legal custody transfer to Cora, nor any findings or discussion about why that alternative proposal was not in the children's best interests.
All right. So, Your Honors, I did not file a formal petition, a petition for the court regarding that issue.
So we don't have a situation where there was a formal petition before the court ignored it, but rather you at trial said, why don't we do this instead?
Right. And there
give more time and pursue this other petition, but right. You didn't actually file and place that alternative disposition before the district court.
Right. And there were these protected discussions that were happening up until the day of the trial where my client was agreeable.
Why not file then the alternative permanency pleading, which would have put the issue before the district court and required consideration?
Timelines, Your Honor, because we were 1-2 days away from trial.
Right, but why not file it earlier as the rules provide?
That wasn't an option my client was putting forth. I don't know what else to say, Your Honor.
Are you saying that was not an option your client was willing to put forth?
Not at that time.
Okay. So just because this is an important point, your client is now saying, well, we should have done a legal custody transfer to Cora. There was a legal mechanism by which she could have petitioned for that relief as an alternative to TPR and put that option before the court, but your client did not elect to do that.
Okay. May I go on beyond my 5 minutes, Your Honor?
Yes. I just want to make sure the panel understands what the procedure was. Regarding this alternative placement option.
The issue then was the fact that the county had kept stating they had not completed vetting Cora as an option and that it would need more time. And at the very last second, she became an option. And so a transfer of custody was not an option that we thought even available until right up until the last minute.
And why not file the pleading at the last minute?
It was not done, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your arguments and the briefing and the answers to the court's questions. The matter is under advisement. You will have our decision within the expedited timeline required under our rules. I believe it's 45 days. Thank you. That concludes the court's oral calendar this morning. The judges will now turn to their non-oral cases.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.